It is Thoroughly Jewish Thursday. Let's do it.
It's time for The Line of Fire with your host, activist, author, international speaker, and theologian, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Michael Brown is the director of the Coalition of Conscience and president of Fire School of Ministry. Get into The Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. That's 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Check out some of these quotes. Israel is a pariah nation on par with Nazi Germany and former apartheid nation South Africa that does not observe human rights of Palestinians, nor is it held to the same standards as any other nation or God on God's green earth. Another quote, modern state of Israel has no right to exist. It was stolen from the Palestinians, and you know it, Brown. These, quote, Jews are terrorists. You do not negotiate with a terrorist, do you? Another quote, Zionism. The Jihadist caliphate known as Israel is a cancer. This guy is full of Zionist blank. This here is from a Palestinian Christian. Here's another. Liar, liar, liar. The Jews don't pray to the God of the Christians. That liar, liar, liar was addressed to me. This is Michael Brown. Yes, loved by many, hated by many. Here to serve as your voice of moral sanity and spiritual clarity as we focus on Israel as we do every Thursday. Here's the number to call, 866-34-TRUTH, 866-348-7884. I'm coming your way from Buffalo, New York, ministered in Canada yesterday morning and evening, crossed over the border, set up for radio, then after radio we'll fly home. If you have any Jewish-related question of any kind, any Jewish-related issue you want to raise, any Hebrew question about Messianic prophecy, question about Judaism or Jewish tradition, question about Israel, the Middle East, Islam, give me a call. Do my best to answer your questions. 866-348-7884. I have been in regular contact with World Vision leadership. In fact, World Vision Leadership has specifically reached out to me after a World Vision employee was arrested by the Israelis, and after some time detained, Israel said they had evidence that he had steered something like $7.2 million in funding that was donated to help needy children in Gaza, had funded that money to Hamas and was a longtime Hamas operative. Well, obviously, that was devastating news for World Vision to hear. And Australia and Germany have since stopped their governmental support of World Vision until they can look into this. And I know this firsthand from World Vision leadership. They are as shocked to hear this as anyone. And from their perspective, they have called for every type of internal and external audit. Already it's set up that everything is audited, that they have various procedures to check where all the funds go, how they're distributed. So this would be quite a complex act of fraud by this employee, if true. And what it points to is not a failing with World Vision, in my opinion. What it points to is the evil of Hamas, if this is all true. Now, World Vision is saying, look, this guy had authorization up to maybe $15,000 in writing a check. All the money is accounted for. Not that much money went through to Gaza to account for all the money that Israel claims. But again, Israel has looked into this very, very seriously and has raised these very serious charges. And World Vision is aggressively looking into this on every level and calling for the most thorough research to be done by external and internal sources. In my mind, nothing changes in terms of World Vision and in terms of their care for the hurting and your support of that. But it's a very ugly situation. And right after the break, I'll play a clip for you. Israel's now arrested a UN employee, something very similar. UN employee being arrested. Why? Same deal. Same deal. Working with terrorists. We'll be right back. We'll be right back.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
You've talked a lot in terms of religion being a pernicious virus. When you talk in those sort of emotional, quite visceral terms, are you doing that to sort of raise hackles and therefore heighten the debate, do you think?
I don't think I've talked a lot about it being pernicious. I'm not even sure I ever used the word pernicious.
But virus is
certainly,
a word you've
certainly virus. And the point there is really not the pernicious aspect, although I actually think it is pernicious. The point there is that it's infectious. It's something that grips the mind in the same way as a virus, a conventional virus, grips the body, in that it takes control, and it does so the better to propagate itself.
Ah, the voice of atheist Richard Dawkins. This is Michael Brown. All this week, you can download the new Ray Comfort movie, getting rave reviews, having great impact on viewers, touching believer and non-believer alike, The Atheist Delusion, a great antidote to many of the objections that are raised, a great way to deal with questions that atheists need to answer, scientific questions. So The Atheist Delusion, you can download it from our website, AskDrBrown.org, AskDrBrown.org. And remember, when you download it, 50% of the proceeds are being donated back to us through Ray Comfort's ministry. So take advantage of that. 866-348-7884 is the number to call. Any Jewish-related question of any kind, glad to take your calls and talk with you today. Got a lot of ground to cover on this Thoroughly Jewish Thursday. Clip number 24. This is about a UN employee now charged with aiding Hamas in Gaza. Let's hear.
The investigation was carried out by the Israeli Shin Bet and the Israeli police, and it found that this individual started working in 2003 with the UNDP. His responsibilities were to oversee the demolition of houses after conflicts, primarily with Israel, and also to clear rubbish after demolitions. Now, the investigation found that throughout this period, he had been in contact with Hamas. He had also used UNDP resources to help build a Hamas naval force and also prioritized the rebuilding of houses belonging to Hamas rather than other sectors of the population. Not only this, but he also took direct order from Hamas members while working for this United Nations body. What is particularly worrying is that he claims, and this is what he revealed in the investigation, that other NGO members are also working for Hamas.
Now, we don't know the factuality of this. We know the charges. Hamas, not surprisingly, has said the accusations are false and baseless. But according to Shin Bet, Israeli security, in 2005, this individual helped build a marina for the use of the military arm of Hamas in the northern Gaza Strip using UNDP resources. During the same year, he worked to persuade UNDP managers to prioritize the rehabilitation of housing in areas populated by Hamas members following a request he received from Hamas. So he's now been formally charged in Israel for assisting a terrorist organization. This much we do know. We do know that international aid comes in to the Palestinian, quote, refugees. And I say, quote, refugees because their refugee status is being enhanced through the generations rather than being aided in terms of absorption into other countries. Isn't that what's happening with other refugees around the world? Not these. This is an open sore. This is a unique situation. This is one that is always designed to make Israel look bad and was an early strategy that goes back to the 50s. That being said, it is clearly known that as funds pour in, a small portion of those funds actually get to the people to help them in their individual needs. And a good proportion of the money that comes in particular to Gaza, to Hamas, is used to build terror tunnels, is used to build up military armament. Did you ever wonder when they're firing thousands and thousands of rockets into Israel and when all these terror tunnels are being demolished, where they're getting the money for these things if supposedly the people are starving and the needs are so great? It's interesting. I saw a clip online where it's a video showing how beautiful Gaza is. And and the people living and enjoying life and enjoying the beach and enjoying it. Just, it's showing how beautiful it is. Like, okay, well, it can be both. Either it's been demolished by Israel in war, or it's beautiful and so on. And, you know, maybe it's selective propaganda on each side, looking, trying to make the bad look worse, trying to make the good look better. But this much we know, there's massive unemployment, and it's not Israel's fault. The problem is being led by a terrorist organization that was voted into power by the people. And they were choosing between really, really bad and really, 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 really bad, between the Palestinian Authority and between Hamas. So who are the victims? The people, the Palestinian people. They are the victims, but they are not primarily the victims of Israel. They're primarily the victims of their corrupt leaders. I did a debate on this subject, partially touched on the subject a couple years ago, and a Palestinian Christian was there and objected, took issue with what I was saying, felt that Israel was much more to blame, but then wanted to say very, very clearly that the leadership of the Palestinians was corrupt, wanted to say very, very clearly that the leaders live like kings and the people live like paupers. So as much as this individual differed with some of my presentation, they wanted to make clear that they fully agreed with the corruption of the Palestinian leadership. Even now, just within the last 24 hours, I read another report of a terror tunnel collapsing and a number of Hamas operatives being injured, a number have been killed. And the question is, are these just collapsing because of faulty engineering, or are these collapsing because Israel is discovering them and using means to destroy them? The more of them destroyed, the better. Obviously, these are meant for destruction. These are meant, there's one purpose for them only. It is to get into Israel underground so as to perpetrate acts of terror. That's the one and only reason, to kill and to kidnap. That's the only reason. And those funds could be spent instead to build the infrastructure, to rebuild hospitals, to rebuild schools, to rebuild homes, to rebuild apartments. It could be used for all of that. And we know another arm of the UN, the specific refugee arm for the Palestinians, the UNRWA, UNRWA, that they have been involved in clearly siding with the Palestinian cause to the point of putting out propagandistic reports or siding with them in ways that make Israel bad, but ways that are not accurate, ways that are not accurate. So we need to face these things head on. Hey, one other thing. It's the Olympic Games right now. And I don't know if you've been following this, but there have been overt examples of anti-Semitism towards the Israeli delegation, towards the Israeli athletes. You think, no, this is the time when everybody comes together. This is the time when all the nations work together harmoniously. That's what the Olympic Games are about. Yeah, not when it comes to Israel. So Israeli athletes getting on a bus the other day with Lebanese athletes, and the Lebanese athletes block them. First, they have the bus driver keep the door closed. When the bus driver finally opens the door, one of the Lebanese delegation actually blocks the Israelis from coming on. So you're going to get on, have a fight. And they said, okay, we'll spread you onto other buses. And that's not acceptable because of security purposes. They finally had to get a, quote, special vehicle to bring them over. According to sailing team trainer Udi Gall, the bus driver opened the door, but this time the head of the Lebanese delegation blocked the aisle and entrance. The organizers wanted to avoid an international and physical incident and sent us away on a different bus. He said he was enraged and shocked by this event. A Saudi Arabian judo participant, a woman, forfeited her first round match. Now, if she won, she would have potentially faced an Israeli in the second round. And some claim that it was forfeited to avoid this. The Saudi said, no, it was legit. She had injuries, but it's documented. It's not uncommon when Muslim athletes have refused to participate in an event. June, Syrian boxer Ala Ghassoun refused to participate in an Olympic qualifying match against an Israeli, saying that to do so would mean that I as an athlete and Syria as a state recognize the state of Israel. Quote, I quit the competition because my rival was Israeli and I cannot shake his hand or compete against him while he represents a Zionist regime that kills the Syrian people. Yep. 2012, Iranian judo champion Javad Mahjoud withdrew from a match against Israeli Arik Zaevi. Mr. Mahjoud cited health concerns, but he previously admitted to throwing matches to avoid facing athletes from Israel, according to the Anti-Defamation League. And this is the Olympics. Hey, there's a question from a caller in Barry, Iowa, about how to donate to Jewish people. Let me just answer this for everyone. I'll do it on the other side of the break.
It's the Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown. Get into the Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Is this mainly to show the unbelievers, believers, or both?
It's for anyone who's breathing. It'll strengthen the faith of the Christian. What my editor had two editors work on the film. The first one, when he finished doing his editing, he said, you know, when we did Evolution versus God, I said, yes, that'll get them. This one took me into worship. And that's what it does. If you're a Christian, it'll take you into worship. If you're non-Christian, it'll share with you a perspective you've never seen before and give you information that'll help you make decisions that'll affect your outcome, eternal outcome.
That was the voice of Ray Comfort, interviewed by yours truly earlier this week, talking about the atheist delusion. Find out more about it. Download it from our website, Ask Dr. Brown, askdrbrown.org. All right, caller was wondering how we could donate to help Jewish people. So here's where you go, togetherforisrael.org. Together for Israel, F-O-R, togetherforisrael.org, run by my friend and colleague, Scott Volk. It exists to get funds into Israel, to help needy believers, to help needy Israelis, to help needy Arab believers in the land. So you will be helping Jewish believers in need. You will be helping secular Israelis, others in need. You'll be helping Arab believers in need. And the funds are all distributed with the love of God. Togetherforisrael.org. If you want to help reach Jewish people with the gospel, well, so into our ministry, AskDrBrown.org. We are constantly involved in Jewish outreach through our many, many resources and materials. And we are quite confident that it is very near and dear to the heart of God to reach out to the lost sheep of the house of Israel. 866-34-TRUTH, 866-348-7884 with any Jewish-related question you may have. So let me just park here for one moment. I am not trying to whitewash Israel or give the impression that everything that Israel does is right and good. I'm not here to condemn the Palestinians as if everything the Palestinians do is wrong and bad, or as if all Palestinians are terrorists. God forbid you would get that impression. I am not trying to say that all Israelis are saints, or that all religious Jews are saints, or that the nation of Israel is always on the right side of justice. Not trying to say that at all. I am contending that, number one, God gave promises to Israel that he will keep. Number two, that his promises to Israel depend ultimately on his righteousness, not Israel's righteousness. Number three, that the world hostility towards Israel is a direct result of God's choosing of Israel and Satan's hatred of Israel. And number four, that it is something very important to the Lord that we reach out to the lost sheep of the house of Israel with the good news of the Messiah. Now, on the one hand, it is important to reach out to everyone. Every soul is precious in God's sight. Every soul is precious. Jesus died for Jew, Gentile, male, female, rich, poor, black, white, all of us the same. Every human being, Jesus paid the same price for. No question about it. I simply underscore that the Messiah came to his own people Israel first, and the gospel remains to the Jew first, and that often it is the Jewish people who are greatly neglected. I know you have Jews for Jesus and Chosen People and other ministries that specifically reach out to Jewish people. I work with both of those organizations as much as I can for Jewish outreach. But overall, for the most part, Jewish evangelism is not a priority in the church. And many people feel that, you know, they can't even reach out to Jews because they're not ready to, as if there's a special mystery about reaching your average Jew. A religious Jew would be more challenging. Often religious person in any group is more involved in their religion and faith, more challenging to reach them. They've got deeper roots. They know their material better. Of course, it'd be the same, all the more with a Jewish person. But your average American Jew is fairly secular. Your average American Jew is not deeply religious. Your average American Jew has not read the Bible much. Your average American Jew doesn't read Hebrew. And they need the good news as much as anyone. And there's something of spiritual significance when a Jewish person gets saved in terms of God's overall plan. So stand with us as we reach Jewish people with the gospel. Stand with the nation of Israel. Not the only thing to do, but among other things, something important in God's sight. You say, yeah, but Jews are this and Jews are that. Yeah, Jews are human beings. Uh-huh. You bet. Jews are human beings and sin and fall short like everybody else. And yes, Israel does stand out from the nations in the Middle East in many, many ways. Israel stands out ethically and morally, and yet Israel is certainly flawed, and Israel has its major issues. I'm not standing with Israel because of Israel's perfection. I'm standing with Israel because of God's purposes. 866-34-TRUTH. Let's go to Luke in Connecticut. Welcome to the Line of Fire. Hello, hey, Luke, are you there?
How you doing?
Good, go ahead.
Yes, I have a question. Now, as far as fleshly speaking, we know that there's spiritual Jews and there's also fleshly Jews that's born of the Jacob descent, of Judaism descent. Now, my question is, are black people, Spanish people, or Chinese people could be considered Jews?
There, Luke, there are some black Jews. There are some Hispanic Jews. There are some Asian Jews, Indian Jews, Chinese Jews. The way that this would happen, though, would be through intermarriage. In other words, as Jewish people were scattered in different parts of the world and settled in among people, say, in India, in China, and then they intermarried with those people, and the people they intermarried with continued to practice Judaism and follow. In other words, a lot of intermarriage you assimilate, right? So a Jew marries a Catholic, and by the next generation, the kids are just being raised Catholic or not religious at all. But if someone marries a Jew, and then this person now takes on Judaism, so a Jewish man marries, say, an Indian woman, and this Indian woman in India begins to practice Judaism, so now the kids they have, she converts, the kids they have will be Jewish. And then if there's more intermarriage and then they preserve the Judaism, you'll end up having Jews who are primarily a mixture of the line of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, and say European intermarriage or Indian intermarriage or African intermarriage. So you have, you know, the Lemba tribes in Zimbabwe and some tribes in Ethiopia that, from everything we can tell, are legitimately Jewish, legitimately Israeli. But that's because of intermarriage somewhere, as the Jewish people were scattered around the world and the tribes of Israel were scattered, that they intermarried with the native peoples. The native peoples became predominant, but they continued to follow Judaism and Jewish traditions. That's why you have Caucasian Jews. That's why you have Asian Jews. That's why you have black Jews, as well as those that would be the original Jews, which would have been Middle Eastern. So, you know, more brown-skinned people than black-skinned or white-skinned. Hey, Luke, we got a break, got to run, but thank you, sir, for the question, and I do hope that answered. If not, let us know, and we'll answer more fully next time around. All right, friends, I've got an hour and a half to take phone calls and to interact with you, and some exciting announcements, a bunch of neat things coming up, so stay with us. You can listen on your computer, on your phone. If you're losing us on radio, just go to Ask Dr. Brown, askdrbrown.org. My joy to lift up Jesus in the midst of this world, among Jew and Gentile alike.
It's the Line of Fire with your host, activist, author, international speaker, and theologian, Dr. Michael Brown.
your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Get into the line of fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
It is Thoroughly Jewish Thursday, this time from Buffalo, New York. Michael Brown, delighted to be with you. 866-34-TRUTH, 866-348-7884 is the number to call. Got a bunch of Jewish news to cover, and as always, your Jewish-related calls. So we'll go back to the phones in Dallas, Texas. Joseph, welcome to the line of fire.
Hi, Dr. Brown.
Hello.
Yes, this is Joseph.
Go ahead.
My observation for you is, you know, you had talked about the rising tide of anti-Semitism, and I saw on a well-known evangelical Facebook page recently a really vicious anti-Semitic post, and the thing that concerned me was not so much that it was done, but that nobody else said anything about it except me. I mean, I said, wow, this post is very offensive. And this was, you know, once again, an evangelical site.
Mm-hmm.
And so now, I'm just bringing that to your attention.
Yeah, Joseph, why did you feel it was anti-Semitic? What was the content of it?
To the best of my recollection, it was saying that the Jews were really bad people, and it gave all these historical examples of bad Jews, which may have had some degree of truth to it, but it took all the worst examples possible of Jews to say that represented all of Jews.
Mm-hmm. Got it. And so this
else,
is a
nobody else. Do, yeah.
Yeah. And so I'm not asking you on the air right now because you haven't said it. When we are done with our conversation, Howard's going to come back on with you. Just tell him privately what Facebook page it was, and we'll just check for ourselves. But since you haven't mentioned it publicly, I won't ask about that publicly. But if you're saying it's a well-known page, then that would mean it gets a good amount of traffic. Now, when I post something controversial, I wish I could follow all of the comments. But we get tens of thousands of comments in the course of a week. Sometimes it could be over 100,000 comments. And many times, almost always, if it's anything controversial, we've got people weighing in from every viewpoint and arguing from every viewpoint. So it's all the more surprising if you're saying that this was done and it was, you know, evil Jews by cherry picking this one, and that one, and look at how bad the Jews are. And you're the only one, or the only one you saw pushing back. That, as you say, would be the greater concern that you wouldn't have more people, because it's a public forum and obviously people weigh in from all perspectives. You know what's interesting, Joseph, is that when you look, for example, at giving, philanthropy, that say you look in America and you look at generous Americans and big givers, consistently Jews are high up on that list. When you look at Jewish crime rates, consistently Jews are low down on those lists. And yeah, Jews are like everybody else. We fall short. We sin like everybody else. When you look at, say, how Israel carries out war when they are combating Hamas in the Middle East, I've talked to the soldiers themselves, and they said the first, when they get into training, they start with ethics. They start with ethics in war. And then they are told when they're engaging terrorists, all the precautions they have to go through to make sure that they don't kill innocent civilians. And they said that their lives are put at risk. And they even have an ethics card that they commit to when they come into the army. And they are not allowed to travel off base without their ID and without that ethics card. They have to have it with them. You find other nations that do that on that level. So yes, Israel falls short. Jewish people fall short. But it is a typical anti-Semitic libel to say, oh, look at how all the evil Jews, and then point to Jews that have done evil in history. Compared to the rest of the human race, we're like everybody else, but in many ways, there's a higher ethic that has driven us.
Give us strength to always do what's right. It's The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Welcome back, friends, to Thoroughly Jewish Thursday. This is Michael Brown. I am delighted to be with you today. 866-348-7884 with your Jewish-related calls. All right, we've been talking about atheism. We've been talking about the Ray Comfort movie, The Atheist Delusion, which you can download this week from AskDrBrown.org. If you haven't done it, take advantage of this. And again, half of the proceeds are being donated back to our ministry. AskDrBrown, AskDrBrown.org, to download The Atheist Delusion. Take a moment to watch the video. It'll tell you more about it. I'm sure you'll want to get it. But it is interesting that percentage-wise, there is a higher percentage of Jewish atheists, according to the surveys I've seen, than the population as a whole. So if the population as a whole said, on average, was 4% atheist and a few percent higher agnostic, maybe the Jewish atheists would be 6 or 7%. And some prominent ones like Sam Harris, and I believe Christopher Hitchens had Jewish blood on one parent's side. And so some very prominent voices have been Jews. And the question is why? And you can just type in famous Jewish atheists and you'll get a list. Now, the list is not entirely accurate. For example, I'm looking at a list on Wikipedia and it shows Albert Einstein. Well, Albert Einstein was not an atheist. You would say an agnostic, or you would say one that believed in some type of a god, or an organizer, a creator of some kind, but not in a personal deity. In any case, why the large number of Jewish atheists? My own opinion is that God has made us to Jewish people to make him known to the world, to be world changers. And we either get it right or we get it wrong. And we are either helping for good or helping for bad. We're either getting rightly plugged in or wrongly unplugged. So we tend to have a disproportionate influence for good or for bad. So an Albert Einstein, a Sigmund Freud, a Karl Marx, these were massively influential figures in the 20th century, and largely for bad, some degree for good. But the question is why this disproportionate influence, and all these three were not religious Jews. Why was that? And then, as I say, some prominent Jewish atheists. And then we could go through the media, cinema, various aspects of entertainment, and on, and disproportionate Jewish influence. And then, you know, you have, okay, why are the shock jocks like the Howard Sterns, Jerry Springer, you know, disproportionate number of Jews there when you compare us to the rest of the population? Again, and then you look at Nobel Prize winners and amazing discoveries, life-giving discoveries in the sciences and medicine, and disproportionate number of Jews there doing good, bringing life. Seems it's a destiny, it's a calling, and we either get things very right or we get things very wrong. Again, just my opinion. By the way, just that info that we got from the caller, I would not say this is a well-known evangelical Facebook page, in my own opinion, and the comments have since been deleted. But nothing more to mention in that regard. All right, we go back to the phones in Brockton, Massachusetts. Tom, welcome to the Line of Fire.
Hi, Dr. Brown. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
It's a blessing to talk to you yet another time. I want to encourage you, Dr. Brown, and also say thank you for the wonderful work you have been doing. So God bless, and I pray that he just continues to prosper.
Thank you. Yeah, go ahead. I need you to speak up. A little hard to hear you, so please do speak up.
Yeah, I have two questions today, and from the Old Testament, when God instructed Moses to construct the ark, and also when Jesus died on the cross, he died in the center of two criminals. And my question is, does God, through the Old and the New Testament, use the number two symbolically to represent nations? And then the follow-up question to that is it right to say there are basically only two nations on earth, Jew and Gentile? I do understand that there are many different nationalities, but basically two nations, and the number two being used symbolically to represent nations.
Yes, Tom, I appreciate the questions. Is the number two used symbolically to represent nations? Not to my knowledge. Of course, number two is very common because it's the first thing after one, so it occurs in many, many different settings. And two, if you're going to have two categories, be it light and darkness, be it day and night, be it good and evil, you have those polar categories. But in terms of specifically a designation, a symbolic designation of nations, no, I don't believe there's a pattern through Scripture that would point in that direction. We know certain numbers can point in directions. 7 can point in a certain direction. 12 can point in a certain direction. But 2, as far as nations, not to my knowledge. As far as saying there are two nations on the earth, the problem would be, though, Tom, I understand your point, that there's ultimately Jew and Gentile. In other words, that all the people who are not Jewish, they're Gentile. So you can have those categories. But when the Bible uses the word nation, whether it's the Hebrew word goy or the Greek ethnos, those are used for the different nationalities. So the words that the Bible uses to describe nations do refer to these different nationalities. So yeah, it's true you could divide the human race into Jew and Gentile, or you could divide the human race into male and female. You could divide the race, you know, human race into rich and poor. You could divide the human race into north of the equator or south of the equator. And then on the fundamentally, Jew and everybody else. But it seems that everybody else is also referred to with that specific term as a specific ethnos or goy, a nation, an ethnicity. And therefore, there would be many different nations on the earth. So appreciate the question, but using just biblical vocabulary, I would say no, it wouldn't work like that. 866-34-TRUTH. Before I go back to the phone, well, I'll tell you what, let me go right back to the phones here. Then I want to play a clip for you and comment on it. We go to Bethesda, Maryland. Rob, welcome to the Line of Fire.
Yes, hello, Dr. Brown.
Hello.
I am in the midst of attempting to learn Hebrew. You have spoken Hebrew and you read Hebrew and you've done it for a long time. But when you were just learning, I was curious, were there any techniques or strategies that you used in order to learn Hebrew?
Okay, learning Hebrew is the same as learning other languages in that you have a lot of obstacles to overcome. When it comes to Hebrew, you have a foreign script as well as a foreign vocabulary. So there are all these things that are disorienting. And I studied Hebrew when I got serious with it in college, because before my bar mitzvah, I wasn't serious with it. When I got serious studying in college, I ended up studying a number of different languages at the same time. And you can apply a few principles. One is that a little, a lot is the best way to learn a language. In other words, rather than have one day a week where you sit down and spend a few hours, if you could spend 10, 15 minutes every day, keep working at it, keep working at it, keep working at it, that tends to be a lot better. And then you want to take in the language every way you can. You want to take it in with hearing, with seeing, with writing, with speaking. Now, are you learning Hebrew to learn modern Hebrew to speak it or biblical Hebrew to read it?
Well, both. I would like to know how to speak it in order to speak with Israelis. But in addition, I would also like to be able to read the Bible in the original language.
Right. Okay. Because those are, even though there can be an overlap in how you learn, the fact is those are very, very different animals. It's the same language. But for example, I'm fluent in biblical Hebrew, but I'm lousy in conversational Hebrew. So you can't, in that respect, you have to concentrate on learning one or the other. So for example, if you're learning to speak modern Hebrew, you just get software like Rosetta Stone or something like that, and you go through it. What you want to do is you want to hear it, you want to speak it, you want to repeat things as best as you can. With biblical Hebrew, you're looking more at something that you're writing and learning off a page, and then writing certain things out. But the key thing, Rob, is repetition, is to keep going through this thing over and over and over. And when you learn, say, your ABCs, so to say, your Aleph, Beit, Gimels, now you build on that. When you keep repeating the earlier things you learned, keep building on that until that gets ingrained, and then keep going from there. There's a useful website, though, that is helpful and fun and free called Hebrew for Christians. So you might want to go there if you haven't been. Hebrew4Christians.com. Hebrew4Christians.com. You'll find it helpful. But repetition, 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 repetition on a regular basis. That's the way to learn a language.
Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Check these out. Exodus 21, verse 7 says it's okay to sell your daughter into slavery, not even in Nevada. Exodus 35, verse 2 clearly states that anyone working on the Sabbath should be put to death. You really got to feel good about enforcing that one?
That's a Pendulette as of Penn and Teller fame, well-known atheist, and raising a valid point. If you're going to say the Bible is God's word, then doesn't mean you have to embrace all of it. You have to embrace all of those laws. The answer is no. If the Bible tells us those laws were for ancient Israel for a time and season, and that was the Sinai covenant, and we are not under the Sinai covenant, and Gentiles as a whole in the world were never brought under the Sinai covenant. Now there is a new and better covenant through the cross. Well, that's what the Bible is telling us. You say, but how could it be right for the ancient world? Well, actually, Israel's laws were wonderful laws, were laws that were life-giving, were laws that, especially in the context of the ancient world, were lofty and were moral. And again, in the culture of the day, Israel came out of slavery in Egypt, and God immediately says, okay, now here are the laws you're going to live by, because slavery was still a part of the economic system, and in Israel it was more or less indentured servitude, okay? So that's the reality. But the fact is, you have to read the whole book, okay? These were laws for then, and they served a purpose then, and they are not binding on all people for all time. They were not meant to be. Again, just things to be aware of. And I mention that again as we're focusing on issues having to do with atheism this week. You can download The Atheist Delusion at askdrbrown.org, askdrbrown.org. Hey, quick word before we go back to the phones on this Thoroughly Jewish Thursday. For those of you who listen faithfully to all 2 hours of our radio broadcast, either on your radio station or via your computer or cell phone or tablet, or subsequently by podcast, I just want to remind you that a large number of our listeners are hopping in the car, 10, 15 minutes, driving somewhere, getting out, and this is their little spot to listen every day. So we'll announce certain things through a broadcast. Some of you may hear it 5 or 6 times. Say, why do you mention it 5 or 6 times? Because most people are going to hear it once in that little stretch, so we do our best to keep people up to date. 866-34-TRUTH. That's why we give out the number frequently. Ever listen to talk radio, whoever show it is, biggest shows in the nation, smallest shows. I'm a guest on many shows across the nation. Give out the number all the time. Why? Because listeners are tuning in at all different times. It is the nature, especially of live talk radio. All right, we go to Randall in North Carolina. Spence, welcome to the Line of Fire.
Thank you, Mark. I've got 3 questions for you, and I will try to say them as quickly as possible and listen to these things you got to say. Okay. One, I've been called for missionary work with Israel. I wonder if you had any practical advice for street level, one-on-one evangelical work with Israel. Number 2, what are the technical legal stance of missionary evangelical work in Israel? Is it against the law? I was there one time for 3 months recently. I met little resistance. I got some interest, But anyway, that's the second question. Number three, do you, Jonathan Burness, his book, A Rabbi Looks at the Last Day, Modern Misconceptions, his stance is that in that book, which was pivotal to me being called to Israel, his stance is that Jesus cannot and will not return until the Jews cry out for him, blessed is he who comes in the name of the Lord. My third question is, do you agree with him on that stance? And the second part of that question is, at what time in the eschatological calendar does that occur? So that's my three questions, and I'll stick with that.
All right. Thank you for the question, Spence. First, I do appreciate your heart for Israel and the Jewish people. First question, as far as evangelism, street evangelism, I would recommend that you connect with a congregation in Israel that does outreach, because Israelis know best how to reach Israelis, and many times there is the language barrier. Some speak English, many don't, and if you are perceived as an outsider, you're going to have less success. But if you felt God was calling you to evangelize in the streets of Israel, what you want to do is look for divine appointments. You want to look for the Lord connecting you to someone. So you would pray and look for a divine appointment. And if you could befriend someone and chat with them and they legitimately wanted to interact with you and hear the message, wonderful. So be it. But if you can work with a Messianic congregation, if for example, you just contact tikkunministries.org. So that's T-I-K-K-U-N, tikkunministries.org. And say, hey, I just want to serve with a congregation in Israel that does evangelism. They might be able to connect you with a congregation there, okay? So that's the first thing. The second thing is, as far as legalities, you are not allowed to proselytize a minor, all right? And that's for anyone in Israel. If you're a Jewish believer in Israel, you're not allowed to proselytize a minor. If you have an evangelistic meeting and you're inviting a 15-year-old neighbor, that neighbor has to get parents' permission to come. So that would be illegal. But if you're just there on a tourist visa and you want to share the gospel, fine. Just understand, if you were considered disruptive, that would be a problem, if complaints were lodged about being disruptive. But if you're just there, kind of sitting around at a cafe, and you know, someone sits next to you and begin to chat and share the gospel with them, it's perfectly legal to do that. Lastly, yes, I see it the same way, that Jesus will not return until the Jewish Jerusalem welcomes him back. I see it based on the words of Jesus at the end of Matthew 23, verse 39. You will not see me again until you say, blessed is he who comes in the name of the Lord. Now, it's a judgment passage. It's a negative passage about judgment on Jerusalem. But he's saying, you won't see me again until you welcome me as King Messiah. Acts 3, repent, therefore, turn to God that your sins may be blotted out, that he may send the Messiah. So Jewish repentance ushers in the return of the Messiah. Romans 11, on the heels of the fullness of the Gentiles coming in, all Israel will be saved. The Redeemer will come to and for Zion. So at the end of this age, at the end of the harvest of the nations, there will be a national turning of the Jewish people. Zechariah 12:10, they'll look to me whom they've pierced, and there'll be great mourning and repentance in the land. So I see that as a final climactic event on the eschatological calendar. It does not guarantee the salvation of a single Jewish person today, but I do believe at the end of the age that there will be a national turning. And again, thank you for your heart for Israel. All right, I'm out of time. Friends, you're not out of time. You can go to AskDrBrown.org. And when you order your copy of The Atheist Delusion, which, as Ray Comfort said, it brings believers to worship at the end. It brings others to tears. It has brought unbelievers to faith. When you get to the end of it, you'll be blessed. But when you download it, remember, 50% of the proceeds go right back as a gift from Ray Comfort's ministry to ours. So you'll be blessed. We'll be blessed. AskDrBrown.org. My bottom line today, Israel's salvation does matter. And God wants us to pray for the salvation of the Jewish people. It is Thoroughly Jewish Thursday. Let's do it.
It's time for The Line of Fire with your host, activist, author, international speaker, and theologian, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Michael Brown is the director of the Coalition of Conscience and president of Fire School of Ministry. Get into The Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. That's 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Thank you for joining us on this Thoroughly Jewish Thursday. Number to call with your Jewish-related questions, 866-34-TRUTH. That's 866-348-7884. Any Jewish, Hebrew-related question you have, Judaism-related question, question about Israel and the Middle East, my joy to help you and give you solid answers as best as we can. By the way, just out of curiosity, and I am not spending time on this, I'm not taking calls on this, but just out of curiosity, I posted on Twitter, which information is more important for you to see released? Okay? I gave two choices. Which information is more important for you to see released? Hillary's medical records, Trump's tax returns, and the third choice, I could care less. Now, this is actually going to tie in with a Jewish point in a minute. Stick with me, and it will. I'm serious. So the dominant answer, I could care less, 58%. The next highest, 26%, Hillary's medical records, because there are many questions about her health. And then the last, Trump's tax returns, 16%. So 58% said I could care less, 26% Hillary's medical records, and 16% said Trump's tax returns. Now, I also tweeted out, if you're healthy and running for president of the United States, why not release your medical records? If your finances are in order, why not release the tax returns? So it is curious that we have both of our candidates not disclosing certain things that many people would like to know and have questions and concerns about. And I think that's fair enough. Let's full disclosure. Hey, president of the United States, you want to know the house is in order financially. If you're a billionaire, you want to know the house is in order financially, right? And you are what you say you are. And hey, you're running for president of the United States. People have concerns about your health. Sure, I'm healthy and fine. Let the whole world know. Sure thing. But how does it tie in with Jewish? Well, somebody pointed out with a smile that grammatically it shouldn't be I could care less, but I couldn't care less. Because if you say I could care less, that means that you do care. I could care less means I could care about this. I do care because I could care less about other things I'm confusing myself. I couldn't care less would be the expression. Well, actually, I looked into a little of the history of this. The original expression, I couldn't care less, apparently emanates from Great Britain. So what do you say? I couldn't care less. Who cares? Meaningless. But then the American variation began decades back as I could care less. You say, well, but that doesn't work. You're saying you do care because you could care less. So some have suggested that it is Yiddish sarcasm, Yiddish being the Jewish language, Germanic, Hebraic, but uniquely carrying the spirit of the Jewish people. And spoken today almost entirely by ultra-Orthodox Jews that have preserved it. Otherwise, it's not spoken much at all. But it's been spoken by Jews for centuries. And it's largely Germanic. If you know German, you'll recognize a lot of Yiddish and vice versa. But then it has a lot of Hebrew in it. And the Hebrew gets changed in pronunciation and things. But above all, it carries a certain spirit of the Jewish people. So the example, I should be so lucky. But the emphasis on the word so, I should be so lucky. Well, here the emphasis would be, I could care less. So you're being sarcastic and you put an emphasis on the word care to say, yeah, who cares? Anyway, a little Jewish tidbit from perhaps Yiddish way of thinking on the English language. But the majority of people have told me that they could not care less. Well, some want to see Hillary's records and others Trump's tax returns. All right, we'll get more Jewish in our focus on the other side of the break. Stay tuned.
Oh, God of burning, cleansing flame. It's The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown. Get into the line of fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Israel's separation barrier is an eyesore that's become part of the landscape. Mostly fence, it turns into a grey concrete wall around communities, cutting through them like a guillotine, separating Palestinians from their Jewish neighbours.
That was BBC Radio 4, August 2nd, BBC's Today program, Katie Watson reporting, and she's talking about Israel's separation barrier. At least that's a proper term. Others refer to it as an apartheid wall. And many would say, look, don't call me anti-Semitic because I have a problem with modern Israel. Don't call me anti-Semitic because I'm not a Zionist. Israel's evil. Israel commits atrocities. Israel does ugly and wrong things. And therefore, when I oppose Israel, I'm doing a right thing. I care about Jewish people. I love Jewish people. I want Jewish people to be saved. But Israel's an evil occupier and needs to be exposed as such. Those sentiments are found among many Christians and many professing Christians. The fact is they are based on misinformation. They are based on anti-Israel propaganda. While Israel is far from perfect, there is not an apartheid wall. There is a separation barrier. And what I find ironic is that here Katie Watson says, it turns into a gray concrete wall around communities, cutting through them like a guillotine, separating Palestinians from their Jewish neighbors. No. If you want to talk about a guillotine, if you want to talk about an object of death, how about the Palestinian terrorists? How about the reason that the fence and wall were put up was to keep murderers out? If you want to use the guillotine analogy, don't point it towards Israel. Point it towards the Palestinian terrorists who have been largely blocked. The terrorist murder rate dropped dramatically as the fence slash wall went up. And you say, well, why does it cut through communities? Because that was the way to keep murderers out. And as Israel analyzed things, this was the best way to do it. Israelis don't like it either. It's an eyesore, and they don't like that there's a wall here and what about 97% of it, a fence. But it's necessary to keep murderers out. That is the reality. The accusation, well, it's a land grab. If it's going to be a land grab, don't just deviate a little bit from the Green Line's border. Just take land. No, this is strategic for security purposes. And if there is a blame, lay it at the feet of the Palestinian leadership that incites Palestinians to kill Israelis. Lay it at the feet of the government that does not adequately work against terror. If you're going to bring an accusation, bring it there. You say, well, why is there a wall? The wall is there in certain places because of snipers. That's where snipers were attacking. And because of that, Israel put a wall up in certain areas. Other places, the vast majority, fence is sufficient. You see, yeah, but you have checkpoints and Palestinians come through there every day. Correct. And by the way, it'd be great if you didn't need checkpoints because you had open borders, but you can't have that when you have terrorism. Look, I'm in Buffalo, New York right now. Number to call, 866-348-7884. I'm in Buffalo, New York, upstate New York, just came down from Canada late this morning, and we had to go through border control. And let me just tell you something. When I came up, let's see, so it was Tuesday night, came up with my assistant Dylan and our driver Miguel. We went through border control. What are you up here to do? Visit friends, speak at a conference. What are you speaking about? I told him, well, leadership. Why? The guy looked at me. Why? Well, I'm a minister. Why? You haven't answered my question. Oh, well, I'm speaking about this. And why? I mean, I really got a kick out of it. And it's like, then he said, okay, you're bringing alcohol, firearms, alcohol, liquor, firearms. No. Okay. Good night. We got grilled. That's just what they do. Coming back through the border last time, I was reminded by my driver when we were driving up the other day that there was a truck next to us that was emitting some type of radioactive signal. So they had to stop us and examine our stuff more carefully. Just a precaution. This is from border from U.S. to Canada. All right. Canada to U.S. The point I'm making is you have border control. That's a reality. But the fact is, this security barrier has kept terrorism way, way down. So why blame Israel for a life-giving thing that is set up? I mention this also to say that I deal with this. We actually show video footage, and we interact with a Palestinian making accusations about this being an apartheid wall. I have a short video about this. You can watch it by going to Ask Dr. Brown, A-S-K-D-R Brown, askdrbrown.org, and click on latest videos. And when you click down, you'll just see it a few videos down, the truth about Israel's so-called apartheid wall. All right, so that's there for you as a resource. And then if you want to watch a full-length one-hour-plus presentation that I did at the University of South Florida, just look for Is Israel an Evil Occupier? Just on the website, AskDrBrown.org, type in the word occupier. And while you're there, you'll see a host of other relevant videos for you. All right. Have you heard about this one? Have you heard about Miss Puerto Rico? She was suspended. Yeah. She was suspended. Now, this happened late last year and only came to my attention the other day. It happened December of last year, so this is not new news, but I only found out about it the other day. Miss Puerto Rico suspended for tweets, Islamic God is not the same God as Christians and Jews. She got suspended for that. A report on CNSnews.com by Mark Judge, 2015, forgive me for not having a nice Spanish pronunciation of Puerto Rico, but that's the way I learned to say it in New York. Miss Puerto Rico Destiny Velez has been suspended after sending out a series of tweets critical of Islam. The tweets were addressed to filmmaker Michael Moore, who recently stood in front of Trump Tower in New York holding a sign that read, "We are all Muslims." So again, this goes back to December of last year. This is not breaking news. In response, Velez, 20, tweeted, "There's no comparison between Jews, Christians, and Muslims. Jews nor Christians have terrorizing agendas in their sacred books. All what Muslims have done is provided oil and terrorized this country and many others. All they do is build their mosques, feel offended by American values, and terrorize innocent Americans and plant gas stations. Most terrorist attacks have had a religion and a name associated with them, and they have been from Islam religion. Many pull out the card of Muslims serving in our military. Are they in the military because they love our nation or to acquire benefits? Why do people want to separate Muslims from ISIS when ISIS is a group of Muslim fanatics? All they do is build their mosques, feel offended by American values, and terrorize innocent Americans and plant gas stations, get guns, and kill innocent people and destroy precious artifacts. Muslims use our constitution to terrorize USA and plant gas stations." The plant gas stations, that's three times. Islamic God is not the same God as Christians and Jews. Shortly after that, the Miss Puerto Rico organization announced that Velez had been suspended. Ms. Velez's actions were in contradiction to the organization. Therefore, as a consequence of her actions, she has been suspended indefinitely. The Miss Puerto Rico organization will not tolerate any actions or behavior contrary to the Miss Puerto Rico organization. Velez apologized for a comment shortly after, quote, "I stand up against bullying. The last thing I wanted to do was bully anyone. I apologize to anyone who felt offended with my words." I don't know what ultimately happened. I haven't followed through on that. But, yes, I have a video on this also. Do Muslims and Christians worship the same God? Now, I've got another video. Do Jews and Christians worship the same God? And then a video, do Muslims and Christians worship the same God? Now, I do not like all the tweets that this young lady sent out, and I'm glad she apologized, because she's painting with too broad a brush. And she's accusing all Muslims of being complicit with ISIS, or all Muslims being in harmony with ISIS, or all Muslims being sympathetic to ISIS, which, of course, is absolutely, categorically not true. But is it true that the vast majority of terrorist attacks around the world for years now have been Islamic? Yes, that's absolutely true. Is it true that a fair reading of the Quran and Islamic tradition leads to violent acts? Yes, that is true. Is it true that Allah, the God of the Quran, is really not the same as the God of the Bible? Yes, that's true as well, although both Muslims, Jews, and Christians believe in one God who created the universe and one God to whom we will give account. Allah, in many ways, is different than the God of the Bible. And I mention always first and foremost, he's not Father. He's not called Father. He's called many other things, but he's not called Father. So there are fundamental differences. But check out those videos, all at AskDrBrown.org. Click on the video library, latest videos, and you'll see these. And get involved in the discussion. There's a lot of lively discussion. And interestingly, a lot of people took exception to my email took exception to my video that said that in many ways Jews and Christians do worship the same God, because we're talking about the God of the Old Testament praying to the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. And then he said, yeah, but Jesus said, if you don't know the Father, you don't know me. Yeah, I agree with all that. I absolutely agree with those critical points, but overall we are praying to the same God. Whether we understand him, know him the same way, conceive of him the same way, those are massive differences. Agree.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown. Get into The Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Religion is just absolutely uncalled for. We are just mere things floating on a rock in space.
Believing in God makes no sense. It's to me, it's the dumbest thing.
We are not only figuratively, but literally stardust.
Wow. These are quotes from the Atheist Delusion movie with Ray Comfort. He's interviewing people. These are some of the responses. And some of the people actually have an eye-opening experience through his questions, through the points that they make. It's an amazing video to watch. You can download it on our website, AskDrBrown.org. If you haven't done it yet, do it today. Remember, 50% of all the proceeds are donated right back to our ministry by Ray Comfort's ministry. So you'll get this video. You'll be blessed. It'll bless your friends that don't believe, don't agree with you. It's a great point for discussion, sitting together, watching this 60-minute video. And again, you'll be donating to us and helping along with that. 866-34-TRUTH, 866-387-8884. All right. A few things to check out here. A claim from WikiLeaks. Hillary gave weapons to ISIS. Now, Donald Trump has said Obama founded ISIS. He's the founder of ISIS. And he hasn't nuanced his words. From what I heard, radio host Hugh Hewitt basically saying, so you mean metaphorically because of our activity in Iraq that he inadvertently founded ISIS, but Donald Trump's more dogmatically saying, no, he founded ISIS. So, of course, there's the latest uproar over that. Did American activities in the Middle East bring about the rise of ISIS? Yeah, it appears so. But unfortunately, we've not always had the best foresight. Is it true that American activities in Afghanistan led to the rise either of the Taliban or Al-Qaeda? There's debate about these things, but in some cases, we armed the people, say, a Muslim resurgent to fight against the Russians in Afghanistan, drove the Russians out, but then became enemies of America. And this is another reason I'm not the president of the United States or in national security or anywhere near it, because I'm not saying these things are easy to call. I'm not saying that it's easy to have foresight as to the decisions made today, how they're going to affect things in 20 or 30 or 50 or 100 years. That's often very difficult. All very difficult to sort out. But Donald Trump comments, obviously, many would feel are over the top and are going way, way beyond what would be accurate. and so here, Hillary Clinton, according to WikiLeaks, this is federalistpapers.org, is being accused of knowingly allowing American weapons into the hands of ISIS terrorists. Weapons that Hillary Clinton sent off to Qatar, ostensibly designed to give to the rebels in Libya, eventually made their way to Syria to assist the overthrow of the Assad regime. The folks against Assad were ISIS and Al-Qaeda jihadists. It's a long and rather convoluted shipment of weapons that, according to WikiLeaks' Julian Assange, Hillary Clinton was well aware of. Could it be true? Could be. I mean, here you've got a situation where the bad guys are fighting the bad guys, and we're picking which bad guys we support. So could that have happened? Could be. It just reminds me of what a mess this is. It just reminds me of the degree to which we need divine intervention. And remember, Muslims decimating Christians, Muslims persecuting Christians, absolutely horrific, absolutely true. And we need to be standing with our brothers and sisters in the Middle East and other parts of the world in the midst of horrific persecution, standing with them every way we know how. But another tragedy in the midst of the tragedies is that the largest number of people who die at the hands of Muslims are Muslims. Muslims fighting Muslims, Shiites fighting Sunnis, these different factions, this tribe against that tribe, this corrupt leadership being pulled down by another corrupt group. So Muslims killing Muslims makes up even the greatest number of casualties and suicide bombings and things like that. So again, it's bad guys killing bad guys, all of whom need the Lord. And wherever we can fight against evil and injustice, we need to. Wherever we can stand against evil and injustice, we need to. But many times, like a situation like Syria, what's the good side, what's the bad side? It's been very difficult to sort out, except standing with the Christians and protecting them in the midst of persecution. Here's news from the States. Mississippi woman sentenced to 12 years for trying to join ISIS in trip disguised as honeymoon. Mississippi woman sentenced to 12 years for trying to join ISIS in trip disguised as honeymoon. Mississippi woman who once sought, this is Fox News, who once sought to disguise a planned journey to join the Islamic State as her honeymoon was sentenced by a federal judge Thursday to 12 years in prison on a terrorism charge. Vicksburg native Jalen Young broke down in heavy sobs during her sentencing by U.S. District Judge Sharon Aycock. Young pleaded guilty in March to one count of conspiring to provide material support to a terrorist organization. Young had faced up to 20 years in prison. Her parents pleaded for leniency at Thursday's hearing. Young, amid sobs, said she was ashamed of her actions. Her fiancé, Mohammed Daklala, pleaded guilty March 11th to a similar charge and is to be sentenced August 24th. Prosecutors have said Young, who converted to Islam while studying at Mississippi State University, had prodded Daklala into the plan. Who knows who was guilty of what? But I imagine when she was considering Islam and being pulled into it, she was not recognizing she's going to end up spending 12 years in prison for going to work with ISIS. What is it that draws people there? What is it that draws people to join a murderous group like that? A group that is guilty of every kind of atrocity. What is it that draws people there? Only God knows each heart. And there's obviously something demonic and ugly going on the highest, highest level. But could it be that they want to stand for a radical cause? Could it be that they see so much corruption and sin in the West and decadence in the West? Could it be, as some have suggested, that this is a young generation that is under-challenged and now they get this radical challenge to engage in these dark, dark works and now they're going to give themselves to it? Either way, it reminds me that what we need to be calling people to is radical submission to Jesus to bring life, not death. Radical submission to Jesus to bring liberation, not bondage. Radical submission to Jesus to set captives free rather than put people in cages, rather than burn people to death, rather than behead them. Let us look at the depth of commitment that people give to bring destruction and death, and let us realize that's the depth of commitment we need to bring life and healing and restoration. If terrorists will give themselves to their cause by life or by death, and their cause is death and destruction, all the more should we give ourselves to our cause to bring life and salvation and healing, whether by life or by death. Here we are. Send us. Use us. That's our cry. That's our prayer. Hineni in Hebrew. Here I am. Send me. Use me. Whatever the cost, the consequence, I want to bring life. I want to bring a message of salvation and hope to a dying world. We'll be right back.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, activist, author, international speaker, and theologian, Dr. Michael Brown. Your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Get into the line of fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
This is Michael Brown, and you are listening to Thoroughly Jewish Thursday. Delighted to be with you today. Coming away from Buffalo, New York, do you have a Jewish-related question? A Hebrew question? A question about Israel? A question about the Middle East? Do you? My joy to help you. Maybe an Islamic-related question. We'll do our best to help you in that regard as well. 866-34-TRUTH. There has been a lot of talk recently about where the aid is going that pours into Gaza. Lots and lots, multiplied millions of dollars of humanitarian aid pouring into Gaza. The question is, where does it go? Where does it go? I'm looking at a report now, USA Today, Abir Ayub. 13,000 families in Gaza still displaced 2 years after war with Israel. According to the report filed from Gaza City, for the past 2 years, Iftitah Amsha, 50, has been sharing a hot, cramped mobile home with her husband and 10 children. Their house was destroyed during the 50-day war with Israel that ended 2 years ago this month. "I don't know when I will get out of here," she said. The conflict left 18,000 housing units destroyed or damaged, according to the United Nations. Fewer than 4,500 have been reconstructed. More than 13,000 families remain displaced in this crowded strip of land along Israel's southwestern border. Palestinian Housing and Public Works Minister Mofid Al-Hassani said delays in international aid are partly to blame. Only 30% of the $5.4 billion pledge for the Palestinians is an October donation. A donors conference in Cairo has arrived mainly from Europe, and they go through all the other issues. Hang on. In point of fact, plenty of money has made its way in, all right? Hundreds of millions of dollars, it would appear. So even 30% of $5.4 billion. So you're talking there about $1.7 billion in aid has made its way in. And there's other aid coming in on a regular basis. Why so many displaced? According to everything I understand, it's because Hamas, which is the government there, recognized terrorist organization, recognized as a terrorist organization by America and other nations, they are the ruling government in Gaza. You say, how many Jews live in Gaza? Zero. Zero. They're not a Jew welcome. If there's a Jew living there, nobody knows it. Okay. So where does the money go? Money's pouring in. Where is it going? It is building terror tunnels. Instead of housing these people, it is building terror tunnels. It is building missiles and weapons. Why? Because Hamas is driven more by hatred for Israel than by love for its own people. Otherwise, you rebuild houses. You rebuild apartment buildings. You rebuild hospitals. You rebuild schools, you build new hospitals and new schools and new apartment buildings and new houses. There is sufficient money to be doing much, much more than is being done. You even have concrete that is being donated that gets shipped over the border from Israel into Gaza. And what does the concrete end up being used for? It ends up being used to make terror tunnels. That's why Egypt has cut off Hamas as well. They've had to deal with terror tunnels for importing weapons under Egypt. They've had to deal with these realities. This is where money is going. If you care about the Palestinians, pray for a change in leadership for them. 866-34-TRUTH. We will be right back. We're going to talk replacement theology as well.
Cleansing flame, send the fire.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Thanks so much for joining us on The Line of Fire today, 866-34-TRUTH. Hey, a quick clip I just want to play for you. Joey, grab for me clip number 8. Played it earlier in the broadcast. Just want to replay this from my interview with Ray Comfort, talking about the brand new movie, The Atheist Delusion. And this is some of our interaction. Clip number 8. Is this mainly to show to unbelievers, believers, or both?
It's for anyone who's breathing. It'll strengthen the faith of the Christian. What my editor had two editors work on the film. The first one, when he finished doing his editing, he said, you know, when we did Evolution versus God, I said, yes, that'll get them. This one took me into worship. And that's what it does. If you're a Christian, it'll take you into worship. If you're non-Christian, it'll share with you a perspective you've never seen before and give you information that'll help you make decisions that'll affect your outcome, eternal outcome.
So Ray Comfort saying this movie, The Atheist Delusion, will bring Christians to worship and will open the eyes of atheists, agnostics, non-believers. Download your copy at our website, AskDrBrown.org. We've gotten a great response already this week. And as people are viewing it, the responses are terrific. AskDrBrown.org, download your copy of The Atheist Delusion. And when you do, remember, 50% of the proceeds are being donated back to our ministry through Ray Comfort's ministry. So we're being blessed in the process of you being blessed. All right. I want to talk a little bit about replacement theology. I want to talk a little bit about an article that restates this again. God's through with old Israel. Jerusalem is corrupt. Babylon the Great rejected by God. The church in God's purposes displaces, replaces the people of Israel. And I want to talk about a verse that's often cited to point toward that. I'll get to that momentarily. First, to the phones. We go to Dallas, Texas. Ian, welcome to the Line of Fire.
Hey, Michael. Hey,
hello.
I've been studying through Revelation, and I've just been trying to scrap like any tradition I've had, which just clutters my interpretation of the book, which I've noticed. And a lot of the questions I have now revolve around the Jewish people in the land at that time. And I mean, it's obvious from Scripture. Now, the guy that picked up when I first he asked me my questions with just a few words, and that's why I said the 144,000. That's my primary thing. But I had two questions, if you don't mind, pretty brief. Let's see. The first one, I wonder what your interpretation is on the 144,000, who you say they are, and why is it that it brings up Joseph, the tribe of Joseph, and I would speculate that it was because it's talking about Ephraim and Manasseh, but it also brings up Manasseh. So I was wondering what your take is on that. And also, I was wondering, do you believe that just prior to Christ's return that Israel will have been trampled by the Gentiles? Because it talks about that in Revelation 11. And then, of course, when you look at the Olivet Discourse, Jesus says in Matthew 24 and in Mark 13 that when you see the abomination of desolation standing in the holy place, he says, then know that the time is near. But then in Luke 21, he says, when you see Jerusalem surrounded by armies, then know its desolation is near. So there's obviously a link between them, the Jerusalem being trampled, and the Antichrist. And so I was wondering, do you believe that there will not be Jews in the land when Christ returns because of the reign of the Antichrist? So those are kind of my...
Got it. Yeah, I appreciate the many questions. And everyone that seriously studied the Olivet Discourse, Matthew 24, Mark 13, Luke 21, seriously studied the book of Revelation, knows that there are many questions that arise and many sincere Christians who differ with their interpretation of these. And often there are very passionate and deep differences. What seems clear to me, though, and undeniable, is when you read the Old Testament prophets, they spoke many words that were directly relevant for their generation, but then that ultimately were not fulfilled in their generation and awaited a future fulfillment. So, for example, when Jeremiah spoke about the destruction of Jerusalem, he saw that happen. He saw his people go into captivity. And then he prophesied the return after 70 years. And that return happened, but not on the level that Jeremiah prophesied. The same with Ezekiel's prophecies, Isaiah's prophecies. They prophesied a return, but it did not happen in full the way it was prophesied. So we recognize there is more still to come. So let's just say, for example, you have 100 families going to exile, and I prophesy 100 families will go into exile, but they will come back, every one of them, and the 100 families will grow into 10,000 families, all of whom will serve the Lord. And the thing happens exactly as I prophesied, except when they return, only 50 families return, and only some of them serve the Lord. You say, okay, that prophecy hasn't been fulfilled yet. So the same thing with the Olivet Discourse. There were many things that were fulfilled with the destruction of Jerusalem in the year 70, and many others that remain unfulfilled. There are things that clearly happened that Jesus spoke of to that next generation, and there are other things that speak beyond it to things that have not yet happened. So I do believe in that sense, it's almost like layers, a layer for that day and a layer for the end of the age. The same with Jeremiah 30. It prophesied the destruction of Jerusalem in Jeremiah's day, but then future judgment, destruction, other layers on that. So what's very clear to me is that the Jewish people are in the land quite plainly at the end of the age. Zechariah 12 is quite explicit. Jerusalem is surrounded by enemies, and then God will fight for Jerusalem. That's an explicit end time prophecy. The same with Zechariah 14. Matthew 23 makes plain at the end of that chapter that a Jewish Jerusalem must welcome the Messiah back. So I see a few things happening. Luke 21 also tells us that Jerusalem will be trodden down by the Gentiles until the times of the Gentiles are fulfilled. So times of the Gentiles could be in judgment as well as in salvation. But as I see several different things happening, I do see a time of terrible distress all over the world, including Israel. I do see a clearly Jewish Jerusalem and Jewish populated Israel at the end of the age being attacked by enemies. I see the call to flee, and we know that Zechariah 14 speaks of half of Jerusalem being taken captive, and then God comes and delivers. And I also see in all of this the ultimate deliverance coming, and with that the turning of the Jewish people to the Messiah. So these are all culminating acts on the heels of the great harvest of Gentiles worldwide, on the heels of great judgment on the world worldwide. So great harvest, great judgment, a great moving of God, great deception, all of these things kind of coming to a head at the same time. And then the final attack on Jerusalem and the final deliverance of Jerusalem and the Jewish people as they turn en masse to call out to the Messiah. Now, I can't be dogmatic about every one of those points, but as I've looked at it for many years, those seem to be the broad lines of interpretation. I believe Revelation can be read on several levels. You know, there is the preterist view that it refers to everything that already happened. There's the futurist view that it refers to all things that will still happen in the ahead. And there's a view that kind of mixes those. I say there are things that did come to pass and other things still yet to come to pass, as I understand the book. And as for Ephraim and Manasseh, just throw that question back to me again. You started there, but let's have that fresh before us. The specific question was...
Yeah, it talks about the 144,000. I was wondering if you believe that, what your interpretation is of the 144,000, but also it brings up the tribe. It says the tribe of Joseph. And we know there wasn't necessarily a tribe of Joseph. There was Ephraim and Manasseh who came from Joseph. And then it brings up the tribe of Manasseh. So I was just kind of confused why that would be there. I mean, if he just said the tribe of Joseph, I would just put, okay, well, it's Ephraim and Manasseh. But it doesn't just say the tribe of Joseph, it also brings up the tribe of Manasseh and then leaves Ephraim out, which, from what I understand, also has some Old Testament relevance as well.
Yep. So it's a fascinating question. Also, in Revelation 7, the tribe of Dan is missing. And that's why you have Joseph and Manasseh. But again, you would have expected Ephraim and Manasseh. So obviously, Joseph is taking the place of Ephraim, but why Joseph there versus Ephraim, don't know. I've not heard a viable explanation. So again, Joseph stands for Ephraim, but as you say, Joseph represents both Ephraim and Manasseh, his sons. So We don't know. And why Dan is missing, there's different speculation. And it was because of idolatry and Israel's history. And it's not mentioned there. Don't know why that specific grouping. So again, why Dan is not mentioned and why Joseph is mentioned instead of Ephraim. But what I do believe it signifies is 12 times 12,000 is the fullness of Israel being saved. So it's the picture that Paul paints in Romans, the 11th chapter, verses 25 and 26, that the fullness of the Gentiles will come in, and on the heels of this or provoked by this, all Israel will be saved. So you have here 12 times 12,000 representing the fullness of Israel, followed by a harvest, a multitude that no one could number, peoples, languages, every nation standing before the throne. That's the fullness of the Gentiles. So I see these two things hand in hand. Hey, keep digging, man. Keep studying.
It's the Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown. Get into the Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
There's no supernatural dimension. There's no rescue coming to us from the unseen. There's no such thing as salvation. And we are as alone as other species are in this struggle.
The late Christopher Hitchens in his debate with William Dembski. And I encourage you, again, go to AskDrBrown.org, download The Atheist Delusion. You'll find it is a super helpful and encouraging tool for you and great to share with your friends who do not believe. There's an article by Dr. Joel McDermott, "Who is Babylon the Great, the Mother of Prostitutes," was sent over to me. It came out a couple days back. I'm not going to interact with all of it at this point. But Dr. McDermott starts by saying, Jesus told the chief priests and elders of the people, "The kingdom of God will be taken away from you and given to a people producing its fruit," Matthew 21:43. For many people, this verse provides the heart of, quote, replacement theology, the idea that the Christian church has replaced the old physical nation of Israel as God's chosen people and priestly nation. Without requiring the use of the label replacement, this is essentially what the verse teaches. It does not mean that the Jewish people can never again taste of God's grace. It simply means that the old covenant way of God's witness and work on the earth, the Old Testament temple ritual system, was being abolished along with everyone in that generation who rejected and killed God's prophets and Messiah. The temple was being abolished because it was never meant to be permanent, but only a symbol that pointed to the reality of Jesus Christ, the true temple, the true Emmanuel, the true presence of God with us. Those Jews who rejected the true temple and insisted on clinging to the Old Testament traditions were thereby committing idolatry just as grossly as any pagan ritual. The kingdom had moved on to its greater fulfillment. Those who refused to embrace the fulfillment found themselves bereft of the true kingdom. It would be taken from them and given to the disciples of the true and faithful people of God. And he goes on from there. Obviously, of course, he's correct in saying that the Old Testament law and prophets are pointing to Jesus and the Messiah and find fulfillment there, and that the ultimate purpose of the temple, God dwelling in the midst of Israel, but pointing to redemption in the Messiah, the ultimate purpose of what God did, the fullness found in the Messiah. Yes, of course. What's important, though, and I'm not interacting here with Dr. McDermott's use of Matthew 21:43, but with a larger misperception about that verse, to the extent he shares that misperception, fine. To the extent he doesn't, fine. But Matthew 21:43, Jesus gives a parable, and at the end of the parable, he says, "The kingdom of God will be taken from you and given to a nation, given to a people bearing its fruit." And that is normally taken to say that the church was replacing Israel. "Therefore, I tell you, the kingdom of God will be taken away from you and given to a people producing its fruits." So who is the you? Is the you the Jewish people, the Jewish nation? Is that the you? So the kingdom is being taken from the Jewish nation, from the Jewish people, and given to the church, to a people producing its fruits, which theoretically could be Jews and Gentiles, but the vast majority would be Gentiles. Well, that's not what it said. How do I know it? Because the text tells me. The text tells me. Next verse, "And the one who falls on the stone will be broken to pieces, and when it falls on anyone, it will crush him." Verse 45, "When the chief priests and the Pharisees heard his parables, they perceived that he was speaking about them." He was speaking about them. Well, why didn't they arrest Jesus? And although they were seeking to arrest him, they feared the crowds because they held him to be a prophet. The Jewish crowds held Jesus, Yeshua, to be a prophet. All right? It was the leadership that was against him and that opposed him. All right? That's the issue here. That's what's being focused on. So the leadership is being replaced. Who is it replaced by? Peter, Paul, John, Jewish apostles. That's who the leadership was replaced by. In other words, it was not a replacement of Israel with the church. It was a replacement of the bad leadership of Israel with good leadership, namely messianic leadership. Now, who are the people of God that are in his family right now, that are in his fellowship right now? All Jews and Gentiles who put their faith in Jesus the Messiah, they are the ecclesia, the church, and they are the ones that will be with the Lord forever. And a Jew who rejects the gospel is as lost as a Gentile who rejects the gospel. And a Jew who receives the gospel is as saved as a Gentile who receives the gospel. We fully agree with that, fully affirm that. But what many sincere Christians miss is the fact that God gave eternal promises to Israel, not based on their performance, but based on his goodness. And he promised to preserve the Jewish people, regardless. How have they been preserved? They've been preserved because of God's grace and calling, not because of Jewish goodness. How have they been regathered? Because of God's gracious calling, not because of Jewish goodness. And how will they be saved in the end? Because of God's gracious calling and not because of Jewish goodness. And what about the promise that he who scattered would regather? Listen, if I burn your house down and say, I will burn it down, but I will rebuild it, and I'll give you a brand new house, and I burn your house down and I say, well, I'm giving you a spiritual house. Well, that doesn't work. I'm scattering you in exile and judgment, but I'm regathering you spiritually. No, that doesn't work. I'm going to smite you with sickness and disease, but I'm going to heal you spiritually. No, that doesn't work. The literality of the gathering, of the healing, of the rebuilding is just as literal, is just as real as the literality of the smiting and the destroying and the pulling down. Look throughout the Bible, and God says, I'll pull down and destroy and rebuild. What is it? He rebuilds what he destroyed. He builds it better. So the Jewish people scattered under God's judgment, regathered under God's grace. So simple question. I've asked it countless times. I've asked it in public debates. I've asked it social media. I've asked it on radio. I've asked it on TV. I've asked it in private settings. I've not yet gotten one answer. I've asked it on radio many times. One viable answer. When God blesses, no one can curse. When he curses, no one can bless. When God scatters, no one can regather. When he regathers, no one can scatter. When he smites, no one can heal. When he heals, no one can smite. When he opens the door, no one can close it. When he closes the door, no one can open it. Right? We agree. Okay. If he scattered the Jewish people in his anger, then how is it that 6 million Jews are now living in the land of Israel today? How'd that happen? If he scattered us in his anger, how did we get regathered? Well, you just did it. You can't just do it. You can't undo a curse of God or a judgment of God. Well, the nations did. No, the nations don't have the power to undo a curse from God, a judgment from God. We have been regathered one way and one way only. Because of God. Because of his will. Because of his plan. Because he promised it. Because he didn't want his name blasphemed. Because this has to do with his plan of salvation. Are Jews regathered in the land just as lost as a Jew outside of the land who rejects Jesus? Yes. They still need the Savior. There is no special plan for Israel that they get in another way. All right? We understand that. We stand together in praying for the salvation of the nations and the salvation of the Jewish people. But let's come to grips with reality, friends. The Jewish people are regathered to the land because of the will of God, which means they have not been eternally replaced. The purposes of God stand fast. Paul's words in Romans 11 remain unimpeachable. Yes, that as far as the gospel, they're enemies for your sake, but as far as calling, they're beloved on account of the patriarchs, the gifts and calling of God are irrevocable. All right, check out our latest articles, videos, all relevant at AskDrBrown.org, and download your copy of The Atheist Delusion today. My bottom line today, I'm putting all my heart, soul, mind, strength in trusting the promises of God.